This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, April 4th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Rob Cantor has this week's edition of the Environmental Almanac, and we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, a look at today's news. A Champaign County judge heard several witnesses Thursday in a sentencing hearing for John White. The former Urbana elementary teacher pleaded guilty in February to molesting 10 second-grade students in both Urbana and Normal schools. Several parents whose children were affected read out statements demanding the highest possible sentence for White. They said tearfully that their children may never fully recover from what White has done to them. State's Attorney Julia Reed says she's aiming for the maximum penalty of 56 years to send a signal.
We've been presenting evidence today of other offenses, of other situations, of Mr. White's history. We believe a maximum sentence is appropriate because he's a danger to the community, and we need to send a strong message to others who are similarly situated. We need to let them know we're not going to stand for that.
White's parents also took the stand yesterday. John White's mother said the ordeal has been like a nightmare that she can't wake up from. Judge Harry Clem will hear more witnesses this morning, beginning at 9:30. The government's star witness against political fundraiser Tony Resco admitted yesterday that he lied, cheated, and stole most of his adult life while blowing millions of dollars on Porsches, private jets, and powerful drugs washed down with vodka. Stuart Levine said his net worth plunged from $79 million in 1999 to negative numbers 6 years later as his pharmaceutical shares tanked. The defense's cross-examination of Levine began yesterday morning. Attorney Joseph Duffy asked Levine whether that drug use affected his memory. Levine says that's possible, but he doesn't believe so. Resco has pleaded not guilty to charges that accuse him of scheming to get payoffs from management firms and to split with Levine a $1 million bribe from a contractor who wanted to build a hospital. Governor Rod Blagojevich is putting pressure on Illinois' college presidents to go along with his latest revenue plan. Amanda Vinicky has more.
Blagojevich's chief budget officer recently held a conference call with the heads of Illinois' public universities. The governor's spokesperson says the purpose of the call was to inform the school presidents that Illinois is facing a $750 million budget shortfall, and unless the hole's filled, the universities would see unprecedented funding cuts. Illinois State University President Al Bowman was on the call and says he didn't feel like it was an ultimatum.
They were reaching out to us, asking for us to use our influence, and also they wanted us to indicate to our representatives what the impact on the campus would be if there was a mid-year cut.
However, Republican State Senator Dave Severson of Rockford says the way he views it, the governor's using a scare tactic.
Of course it's a threat. When you tell a president of a university that if they don't support an improper financial scheme or they could lose their funding.
Blagojevich's office says it won't just be universities at risk. A spokesperson says all state agencies could see cuts. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Officials in southern Illinois are warning of flash floods after weather officials predicted more rain would fall on already soaked ground. The Weather Service predicted 1 to 2 inches of rain through this morning. Across the Mississippi River in tiny Grafton, Illinois, residents yesterday nervously kept vigil on a hillside where a mudslide 2 days earlier forced a family from their home, closed down a section of a river road, and threatened to knock out much of the tourist town's power. A patch of ground about the size of a small office gave way Wednesday night, sliding about 20 feet before being held back by a tree line on a hill that's also home to electrical transmission lines and at the very top a bed and breakfast inn. The executive director of the Chanute Air Museum says a state grant will mean a lot for keeping things financially sound this year. But Hal Laybach says donations from the public have been the key to keeping the Rantoul facility going for the immediate future. He says the $35,000 grant from the Department of Tourism was not the result of any request from the state, but rather the lobbying efforts of state legislators Bill Black and Mike Frericks. The funds are too late to save this year's air show, which was recently canceled. But Laybach says things are looking better overall. He says the public exceeded the state grant, donating more than $40,000 when responding to letters seeking help.
We sent that out and we said, well, we either find out if they care or if they don't care, then then we know where we stand and we probably should close the doors. But I think they came out loud and clear that they support us very strongly. And so, I mean, you know, 56% response of numbers of people, I think that's pretty darn good.
Chanute's financial problems began when it didn't receive a state grant before last year's air show, forcing administrators to dip into reserves. Laybach says administrators are taking a wait-and-see approach before deciding whether to resume the air show next year. The museum seats its new board of directors this weekend. The current group was asked to step down in favor of one with more marketing expertise. More than 500 veterans recently treated by Danville's VA hospital are hearing word of a small infection risk. Letters have gone out to the patients informing them that equipment used to perform endoscopies over the last few months may have not been properly disinfected. The 524 veterans are urged to visit the VA or one of its outpatient clinics. The hospital hasn't heard any reports of illness. And Department of Veterans Affairs spokesman Bob Robinson says the chances of that happening are slim at best.
We do not want to take any chances, and we sent the disclosure letters out, and like I said, that's the VA policy. We don't try to hide anything from our patients. Something happens, we want to make sure that we found out why it did and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
The problem with the biopsy valve caps at the VA hospital was discovered during a patient safety review last month. It's since switched to using disposable caps. The outpatient clinics are located in Decatur, Springfield, Peoria, and West Lafayette, Indiana. Robinson says staff is prepared to quickly perform the tests at no charge. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. On this week's Environmental Almanac, Rob Cantor talks about raising awareness of the presence of industrial chemicals in humans and promoting chemical policy reform.
By my count, nearly 60 people came out to the Champaign Public Library Tuesday evening for a presentation by Ken Cook, who is president of the Washington, D.C.-based Environmental Working Group, an organization that describes itself as using the power of public information to protect public health and the environment. If you weren't there, you missed hearing from an articulate and entertaining speaker about how industrial chemicals show up in human bodies and about changes in individual behavior and public policy that could help reduce our exposure to such chemicals. The title of Cook's presentation, 10 Americans, 287 Chemicals, referred to a 2004 project conducted by Environmental Working Group, which analyzed blood samples taken from the umbilical cords of 10 newborn babies from around the country and found in them 287 industrial chemicals. Among the chemicals found were many that are known to cause cancer or other threats to health at some level, as well as many whose impacts on people have never been studied. In the original press material from the 10 Humans Project, Cook acknowledged that detection of a chemical is not itself an indication of a risk to health. But in his presentation Tuesday evening, he implied that the ubiquity of industrial chemicals may explain some disturbing trends in the health of Americans over the past three decades, including everything from our high rates of cancer to increasing incidence of certain birth defects and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Cook took pains to address the chemical industry's standard response to reports such as 10 Humans 287 Chemicals, which is to question whether compounds found at levels of parts per billion could really have an impact on the functioning of the human body. In doing so, he pointed out that many useful and widely known pharmaceuticals, including hormones used for birth control, as well as treatments for conditions ranging from depression to erectile dysfunction, achieve their desired effects at levels of parts per billion. Cook allowed that highly conscientious individuals can avoid many chemicals by the consumer choices they make. But he also acknowledged that it is difficult and time-consuming to figure out what's in many of the products we buy. In part, that's because the only federal law regulating chemicals in consumer products, the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976, doesn't require testing for potential impacts on human health and safety, in the same way laws governing pharmaceuticals or pesticides do. Cook concluded his presentation by pointing out that there is legislation on the horizon at both the state and federal levels that would remedy the shortcomings of the 1976 Act. In Illinois, State Representative Naomi Jacobson, who sponsored Cook's talk, plans to introduce a bill to ban phthalates, which are a particular concern in plastic products made for babies and small children. At the federal level, legislation dubbed the Safe Kids Chemical Act, which was first introduced back in 2005, is likely to be brought up again in the next couple of months.
Rob Cantor is a writer with the University of Illinois Environmental Council. To find out more about Environmental Almanac or listen to it again, follow the links on our website at wyll.illinois.edu. And you can read Environmental Almanac on Sundays in the News Gazette. Support for Environmental Almanac is provided by the University of Illinois Office of Continuing Education. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, cloudy skies today. We have a high around 48 degrees. A nice weekend in store for us. Partly cloudy tonight, the low around 32, but tomorrow mostly sunny with a high around 62, mostly clear Saturday evening, the low around 38, and mostly sunny Sunday, the high around 68, mostly cloudy. On Sunday night, a chance of showers, the low around 45, mostly sunny Monday with a high of 65. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, April 4th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wyll.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.